Dreamweaver, I believe I can get you through the night.
Well, that was beautiful. Welcome back to the Bitter End Podcast with me, Tom Denny.
But don't you see, Tom, it's because Freddie, he does the dreams.
I see. Well, yes, I was going to, yeah. Okay, I get it now. I thought that was just like a really nice musical interlude.
And me, Todd Jordan.
Well, this is a smooth intro to the podcast so far.
We are two episodes into season five, the season chosen by you guys, all about A Nightmare on Elm Street with the big bad lad, Freddy Krueger himself.
So this is the second movie. It's Nightmare on Elm Street, part two, Freddy's Revenge.
Freddy gonna get revenge.
Yes. As the trailer for this says, someone's back. I'll tell you who's not back. Wes Craven.
Yeah, no, Wes Craven.
He is not back, but obviously the star of the show, it is Freddy Krueger, played by big Bobby England, Robert England, Bobby UK. He is proper naughty.
Oh, and he big looks Bobby like, UK!
He looks like he's being proper naughty in this film. What are we dealing with here, Todd? What's the imagery from the trailer?
Well, the trailer is like super slash-tacular, yeah? They've got big Fred Krugs, the Krugster, Bobby UK.
Krug dog.
They've got Krug dog and the
Krugcumber.
They've got Bobby UK fucking jumping through windows, disappearing midair, but the glass still falling on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
They've got Bobby UK jumping out of trap doors and basically going boo. They've got Bobby UK fucking pushing some dweeby teen boy around and going, no, no, you're my children now.
He throws somebody into a barbecue. He looks like he busts up like kind of like a luau-y kind of barbecue party that looks a bit like the end of Grease 2.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what that's all. I like in the trailer that the beginning bit, you've got your big 80s horror trailer voice going, somebody's back. He's not friendly. And it's just kind of like, he's not friendly. I mean, that seems like an understatement when we're talking about Freddy Krueger.
Well, I mean, this was only 1 year after the first film. The first one was 1984. This is 1985. So they're clearly trying to just underline that, like, Nightmare on Elm Street is the franchise, yes, but Freddy Krueger is the brand.
Mm.
You know, they're really pushing that.
They're trying to get the momentum going with Big Fred.
Now, can we just clarify?
Yeah.
I have seen this film before, but only once. Have you, Tom, seen this film before?
I have not seen this film.
So you don't really know what to expect.
No, I couldn't tell you. I mean, only going from the trailer, my concern is that Freddy seems kind of like out in the open, like that he's at a barbecue full of like loads and loads of kids, which is not... To my understanding, how Freddy Krueger works, he gets you in your dreams. He doesn't walk around just like sort of massacring people.
Yeah, he's out and about, isn't he?
Did all of these people have a big mass slumber party? And then they had a joint dream where they're all like, hey, beach blanket, bingo. And then Freddy comes in and gets them.
Is there going to be a film later in the series about someone with narcolepsy where they just keep nodding off for like a few seconds at a time throughout the day and Freddy will like almost get them and it's always fine?
Yeah, they're always just on the bus going,
oh, nodded off for a minute. All right, buddy. So we better just fucking dive straight into it. Would you like to have a big old punt at the IMDb score? I would like to remind you that the previous venture, A Nightmare on Elm Street, scored a massive 7.5. Fully deserved.
Yes.
1 year on. No Wes Craven, but Bobby UK right in your face.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, the lore of films is that like the score is going to go down. I don't know exactly how far it would go, but the barbecue scene has me somewhat concerned.
Mm.
There seem to be some really cool, gnarly, like body horror, like eyeballs in someone's throat and knives coming out of people's hands. That looks cool, but like, have they lost sight of what Freddy is already? I'm gonna go 5.7. So that'll be a drop of two.
Close, but no banana. It is a 5.4.
Ooh.
I know. Close enough, though, brah.
Close enough.
I don't think you should feel too bad.
Yeah, and in sort of like the world of films that we generally seem to watch, 5.4, that's basically a two thumbs up, pretty much.
I eat 5.4s for breakfast, mate.
Yeah.
All right, should we go have breakfast?
I'd rather go to some sort of luau barbecue, but I'm not fussy.
I'm glad you're not fussy. Then you're going to be perfectly happy with what you're about to be given.
Okay, cool. We'll see you in a bit, folks. I don't know about you, and I certainly don't know about me, but
It's a thinker. It's a bit of a chin scratcher.
It's a Rubik's Cube film.
It's a, listen to this, listen to this. That's me scratching my chin in thought.
What was going on in that? What was the thinking? What was the thinking, Todd, behind this sequel?
Now, let me just straight up lay it on the line. I don't think it's bad. It's not bad. It's definitely not the Nightmare on Elm Street sequel I wanted.
No. It was not a Friday the 13th part 5.
No.
It was not that, but I don't... And I think coming in hot off of, like, watching the first one, I wasn't expecting whatever it was that was happening here.
Yes, so we will recap the story for all y'all, but in brief, it's more of a character piece.
Yeah.
It's much less about Freddy.
So actually, in saying that it's not like Friday the 13th Part 5, it is like Friday the 13th Part 5, in that Friday the 13th Part 5 is about Tommy going a bit mad and becoming Jason Voorhees, or everyone thinking that he's becoming Jason Voorhees.
That's true.
And that is a lot of what is going on in this, actually. But it's done better. It's not as fucking bargain basement as Friday the 13th 5.
Oh, absolutely. Nightmare on Elm Street, Part 2, Freddy's Revenge, has some killer set pieces. It's just the connective tissue to tie those set pieces together is a little spongy.
Yeah, and we'll get into those in a bit. So, Todd.
Yes, mate.
What's going on, mate? What's happening?
Well, straight off the bat, I noticed that, it's not Wes Craven in the director's chair. It is.
And I think you can tell.
It's a fella.
Right off the bat, you can tell.
Yeah, it's a fella by the name of Jack Shoulder.
Mr. Shoulder.
That's a fun surname.
That's a fun surname. I like that.
Yeah, it feels like deleted scene from Reservoir Dogs or something.
Yeah. Okay.
You can be Mr. Shoulder. okay. So straight off the bat, I kind of wonder why Wes Craven himself, the Cray Cray Craven, didn't come back. Like, did he not want to?
A year after.
Just a year later. I can only think he would have been fucking busy, right? I haven't looked at the timeline of his filmography. This was probably, I'm gonna guess, around the time he was working on Swamp Thing or something.
Because I don't think he comes back until The New Nightmare.
Yeah.
I don't think he does any of the other ones.
He's got to slot Scream into there somewhere.
Scream
and Serpent and the Rainbow.
Scream is way after. Scream is probably around the time of New Nightmare. Like, it's like that 90s kind of period. So there's a long, like, the whole of the 80s, he's just kind of like, I'll sit this next one out.
He was doing other things. Like, yeah. I think there was a definite attempt for him to restart a brand new franchise called, I think it was Shocker.
Okay.
Right, about this guy who gets put in the electric chair and then comes back to life and electrocutes people. Only made it to one movie, but like he put a lot of eggs in his basket that like Shocker was going to be his new Elm Street.
And I got a feeling that I think with Swamp Thing that I think he was trying to get away from doing horror, but
I like Swamp Thing.
I just don't think that Hollywood would let him get away from horror, and maybe deep down he couldn't get away from horror. So maybe that, you know, he was on a spirit walk, which is why he didn't return to do Elm Street Part 2.
Walk Wild, Wesley Gray. But yeah, so we've got Jack Shoulder, Mr. Shoulder, is in the director's chair. This movie starts with a really nicely composed shot of your classic American yellow school bus. There's two mean girls on it and a nerdy, kind of shy kid. Kind of a Crispin Glover type, kind of... There's a look at him that's a bit like, does he have a gun in his bag? Or does he just have a Dungeon Master's guide? Like, it could go either way.
Yes, yes.
They're on the school bus. Tom noticed straight away that the bus driver is played by Robert Englund. Robert Englund, Bobby UK himself. Same actor who plays Freddy Krueger, of course. We've got Bobby UK in the driver's seat of the school bus. Not in the makeup, just him as a bloke. Surprise, surprise. All is not what it seems. The bus goes, veers crazy off the road. They drive through the desert, but it's this
Desert of Cleveland, Ohio.
Springwood, Ohio.
Springwood,
Ohio. But that this is, they get a freefer for this because we're presumably in Freddy's surrealist world.
Yes, yes.
Because it's all, the sky's a bit purple. It all looks kind of like in Beetlejuice when they see the sandworms and all of that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and the bus gets stuck on this like rocky outcropping and Freddy's coming down the bus and he's going to fuck him up, man. He's gonna get him. And just as he's like slicing his claws across the tummy of one of the mean girls, it cuts to someone slicing up a tomato in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And that was all a dream. A nightmare that was being had by our leading man.
Jesse. I just want to say, tomatoes for breakfast.
That's a thing, a fried tomato.
It wasn't fried, though.
Just fresh.
I mean, that's fair enough. That's nice and
balsamic vinegar, some fresh mozzarella.
Yeah, it's just nice and healthy.
A bit of basil.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, nice and healthy. Sorry. Don't mean to criticise. I was just like, yeah. Maybe I should take a leaf out of her book.
Well, the other thing that's on display that you could have if you don't want tomatoes for breakfast is a box of a horror-themed breakfast cereal called Fu Manchus. Chews spelled Chews, like you would chew, but also like Fu Manchu, the classic horror villain, I suppose.
Someone had a lot of fun making that, didn't they?
Yeah, and so Jesse comes down. He's had this nightmare about the school bus. His mum's chopping the tomatoes.
You get the impression he has a lot of nightmares because his little sister is like, why does Jesse wake up screaming every morning?
And they're like, shut up and eat your Fu Manchus.
Yeah.
And she's fishing around because she wants the Fu Man fingers.
And she puts the Fu Man fingers on.
And they're these plastic red claws.
You get like them, like in, you know, like a cheap Halloween costume. And like Jesse looks freaked out by them because it's reminding him of Freddy Krueger. And the family have just moved to Elm Street, basically, because Jesse's room is still full of boxes and the grumpy dad is like, I want that room unpacked by the end of the day, Jesse. I don't want you with all the things in the boxes there. Okay.
And it's the same house, crucially.
Yes, yes.
They've
so this is what
the
transpires.
Same house from the first film.
It's Nancy's house.
Yes, and he and Jesse is sleeping in Nancy's bedroom.
Yes, so he finds this out because he doesn't know this because he's just moved to town. He doesn't know about, you know, like the Freddy lore that's going around. He finds this out off of his douchebaggy jock mate, Grady.
Grady, who always has food in his mouth.
Yeah.
Has a lot of lines, always has food in his mouth.
And we're first introduced to Grady and also Jesse's kind of love interest, Lisa, at a baseball game where Jesse gets a baseball thrown right in his face and then he has a fight with Grady where Grady pulls down his trousers and they have a bit of a roll around and then the coach makes them do press-ups, at which point Grady says that the coach likes to go to a gay bondage bar every night. That's interesting. I wonder if that will play into anything later on in the film.
Spoiler alert. It does.
Okay. All right. And then, so yeah, like Jesse then like has this bit where he kind of their house is always boiling hot, it seems.
Eerily hot. The records that he leaves out start to melt off the edge of the table.
Yeah, whenever he's in his bedroom, he's absolutely drenched in sweat. I don't know if this is a fashion choice or just because he's hot all the time, but he does not seem to be able to button a shirt up all the way. Doesn't even come close. The whole family is complaining about the heat, and he sees what I assume is in a dream, but maybe not. We're not really sure. Like, he sees Freddy Krueger in the basement of his house stoking the furnace, and then Freddy like pops up and he's like, "Yes, Jesse, kill for me," because Jesse finds the clawed glove that Nancy's mum had hidden in the basement in the first film.
Yes, absolutely. This is when in the first film, when Nancy's mum is telling the backstory about how she had tracked down and murdered Freddy Krueger all those years ago, she kept the glove just as a reminder, and she stores it in the basement. Freddy Krueger is in this film, he has led Jesse down there, so Jesse finds the glove on his own, and this kind of, I suppose, it wakes up Freddy's spirit a little bit, and he says, "I need you to kill for me." And then there's this great line where he goes, "You've got the body, I've got the brain." And then he peels back the skin on Freddy Krueger, peels back the skin on his own head.
Yeah.
And we see his brain underneath, and it's grey and pulsating and ugh.
Yeah, I like that. It just made me wish, I don't know if the song had been written at the time, but I really wanted the Pet Shop Boys song, "You've got the brawn, I've got the brains, let's make lots of money." I just really wanted that to start.
I know that song. I don't think that's what Freddie had in mind.
Ah, okay, fair enough.
So then, at this point, we're a bit like, okay, this is interesting. We got like...
It's a different twist, isn't
dreamy
it?
Dreamy stuff, but like, yeah, Freddie's talking a lot. He's talking directly to our lead, who's this kind of young, quiet, troubled guy, as opposed to like a well-adjusted, popular teen girl. Mm. You know, we've got this kind of slightly different vibe to him.
And Freddy's not really, like, it's not taking place in the dream world so much. It's like Freddy's trying to break out.
Yes, break out of the dream world through Jesse's body, which is cool. I'm into that. There's a slightly odd bit where Jesse gets forced to tidy up his room. And he puts on, like, some... I don't know, what, some, like, house music or something?
Yeah, some very, like... like light pop kind of like house music or something. Yeah, like sort of like soul kind of dance, and puts on some like gold sunglasses and a baseball cap and just dances around his room and has this like weird... You spend an awful lot of time, like more time than this film should spend, on him tidying up his room. It seems to be, it's a much bigger plot point than it needs to be.
It goes on for ages with him on his own, and he's got this pop gun like with a cork in the end, and he's at first he's pretending it's a microphone, and then he's pretending that it's his penis.
Yeah.
And at the exact point that he's like popping off the pop gun of his peen.
Yeah.
Lisa, his girlfriend, walks into his bedroom. Or not even his girlfriend, just his love interest at this point, like let in by his mum. And she's like, "Oh, sorry, I've come to help you tidy up your room," which is the most awkward first date in the world. If you don't really know someone that well, go get some pizza or see a movie.
Yeah,
don't help him tidy up his room.
Yeah, not like, "Do you want to like go through literally all of my shit?"
Yeah. So she's like picking up his like jock itch powder and being like, "Where do you want this?" And he's like, "Oh, it's not mine."
Yeah.
It's awful. I feel for him.
But this is the point where they find Nancy's diary, because he's in Nancy's old room, and apparently it's still in there. And so they find out about like who Freddy Krueger is.
Yeah, and they do it in kind of an interesting way. So the first bit of Nancy's diary they read is about her looking out the window at Johnny Depp fuck off Depo, like who lived over the road, and kind of like perving over him in like a teeny way. And they're like, "Oh, this is going to be like a nice sexy diary.
Let's
read the next bit." And the next bit is about like Freddy Krueger trying to cut her up with razors, and it's all horrible. And they're like, "Oh my God, this is..."
But they start reading it like, "Oh, he wants to tear my clothes apart, and he's going to kill," like, and it dawns on them that actually this isn't sexy, this is grim.
Yeah, and again, that bit's like it's played well.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like Wesley Cray Cray would have executed it a bit better, but like it's on the page, the lines are fine and I like them.
Yeah, no, I think that was a good bit. Now, I mean, like, things that Wes Craven would have executed better. Now, Todd, can you just name for me some, like, just, like, quickly, some, like, just, like, some iconic moments, some iconic imagery or set pieces from the first film?
From the first film? Well, you've got the girl who goes all zero gravity and flies up and lands on the ceiling and crawls across and keeps screaming. That's pretty iconic.
That's awesome.
You got the latex wall.
That's like great.
You've got the blood fountain coming out of Fuck Off Depot's bed.
Brilliant.
These are all great scenes.
These are all great scenes. Some of the scenes that we've got in this film that communicate Freddy's evil power, like Jesse's family, they have a budgie. One of the budgies, they have two budgies. One of the budgies goes evil, kills one of the other budgies, flies out of the cage, bites the dad in the face, and then bursts into flames and explodes. Yep, that's terrifying. There's a bit where some lightning shoots down through the window and blows up a plate in the kitchen. That is chilling to the very core. And then there's a bit where sports equipment just attacks people, and like some killer tennis balls they're just rocketing around the place. And fuck me, I will have nightmares about that for weeks, I am sure. Oh, and also there's a bit where a toaster catches fire, and the darndest thing, it's not even plugged in.
Dun dun dun.
Yeah, there are some good gnarly bits in this film, but also, fuck me, there are some weak-ass moments in there.
Well, they're definitely holding Freddy back for the latter third.
A budgie bursts into flames and explodes.
Tom, I know, buddy. I was there too. I saw it. Yeah, it was not the best bit of the film.
No.
It was no Bobby UK with the crazy razor claw hand running around going, no, ooga booga. It wasn't any of that.
Yeah.
But they save him, you get him.
You get him.
And when you get him, he's not the best bit, I don't think.
No. So like the next point where you get him, like Jesse's having these big nightmares and he wakes up in the middle of the night and he goes out for a beer to the only place he knows he can go and get beer, which is at the gay bondage bar.
It's called Don's Place.
He goes into Don's Place, orders a beer.
Now, I feel like there's something we need to address at this point.
Mm.
Okay. There is some heavy subtext. It's like, it's there if you want to look for it. You can ignore it if you want to, and still, the film is the film. There's some stuff to definitely imply that Jesse, our main character, is a gay man. Right? That is in the film.
Yeah, or that he's like, he's wrestling with some emotions.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's some little implications. There's some stuff like he's definitely not as keen to start this relationship with Lisa as Lisa is, for example.
No, no.
There's some things like that. And he gets told early on by Grady when they're while they're doing their push-ups after practice,
yeah,
about the existence of this gay bondage bar, and he's new in town. Like, he doesn't know anybody or anything in town. And I quite like this thing of, like, what starts it off is Freddy, like, sends a bolt of lightning through the window, which blows up a plate. And then it's just, like, he's hypnotized. Jesse's, like, hypnotized. He walks out into the night in the pouring rain.
Yeah.
He's, like, completely soaked. He's got no jacket. And he's got no reason to go there, but he just goes on a beeline to this club he's like a total zombie, and then he turns up and you almost think that this is going to be one of the dream sequences, because he turns up and it's full of like all of these like crazy stereotypes of people.
Yeah,
they're all like behaving weirdly and they're all looking at him like he's crazy, but it's not a dream.
Yeah, because his coach from baseball shows up like in like sort of like a tiny like weather lace waistcoat and shorts, and like busts him for being in the bar, and like goes and makes him run laps in the school gym.
Yeah, in the middle of the night, they leave the bar,
yeah,
to go and do laps.
Yeah, and then he's like,
gym.
Go hit the showers, and then this is where the coach gets attacked by all the tennis balls while Jesse is having a shower, and then the coach gets like lashed up with
skipping ropes
and dragged into the shower and like kind of like sort of strung up on the pipes, completely naked. And then Freddy Krueger emerges from the mist of all the the shower spray and slashes him up.
Whips him with towels.
Oh, yes.
Until he bleeds.
Yes, gets whipped with towels until he bleeds. And then he kills him with his razor hand. And then it kind of fades into being Jesse.
It's Jesse, who's standing there nude from the shower with the razor claw on, having cut him up himself.
Yeah.
It's a bit of an onion of a scene.
It's an odd one, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then the next morning, he doesn't remember this happening. Because he goes to the school and Grady tells him that he's been killed. And then he kind of freaks out. Because there's all this stuff with the Freddy things where I think even you as the audience are not meant to be sure. Like, is this happening? Is Jesse doing this? Is Jesse aware that this is happening? Because there's a moment where Jesse feels like he nearly kills his sister.
This bit is probably my favourite bit of the film.
Okay.
The camera starts out in the boiler, in the basement of the house.
Oh, it's like a POV.
It's a POV shot. Mm. And you hear Freddy's voice being like, I can't remember what he says, but it's something like, I'm coming for you. It's like that. And it moves up the stairs really slowly. And the music is amazing. It's music by Christopher Young this time, not Charles Bernstein. And it's just like really cool orchestral score, like really lush. Like... And the POV camera moves in to his little sister's bedroom. She's like 9 or 10. And it's looking over her. Mm. And then the camera moves around and it's Jesse, her brother. We're like, it's not Freddy at all. It's Jesse that's looking over her. But he looks fucking snooker loopy, right? He's got this crazy look in his eyes. He's all drenched with sweat. And then he lifts up his hand and he's wearing the claw.
Yeah.
Doesn't hurt her. Doesn't hurt her. It just either cuts away or he walks away. I can't quite remember.
I think he walks away. I think he kind of realises what's going on. He's having to fight it. Then he goes to Lisa's crazy luau pool party.
Oh, my God. This is the coolest party in all of Springwood, Ohio.
This is then becomes like a big bit in the finale of the film where Lisa is apparently having a pool party and barbecue at her place. The parents are there, like, you know, like doing the barbecue, and they're like, we're going to bed now, kids. All right, you'll be good. Don't stay up too late. And then as soon as they go in the house and turn the lights off, the kids all start basically like dry humping each other and chugging beer.
They put on U2 straight away. Yeah. The sexiest band.
Fucking hell. Jesse's still freaking out. Him and Lisa kind of like make out. And get a little bit sexy, get a little bit close to a bone down. But then Jesse's kind of motorboating Lisa. And then he realises he's got this giant monstrous Freddy Krueger tongue.
It's all grey and dead looking.
And about like 9 inches long.
Yeah.
And then he freaks out and runs off, leaves Lisa feeling very unhappy and
frustrated, very, and confused.
Yeah, very frustrated and confused. And so he goes to Grady's house. I don't know why Grady wasn't invited to the party.
Because he's always got food in his mouth.
Because he's also a bit of a dick. Grady's bedroom is also just so amazingly decorated. I'm just going to, just side note there. He's got the weirdest collection of band posters on his wall that, like,
All of the posters on his wall are put up slightly wonky.
Yeah, like, on a bit of a wonk.
Perfectly on a wonk.
Yeah.
There's a Frank Zappa one.
There's like Stray Cats, like, you know, a rockabilly band. There's
Lamal,
like 80s, like big hair pop guy.
King Cobra, like the hair metal band.
Yeah, and then there's a Tina Turner poster. He's got some like good eclectic taste. I like that. And he goes over and it's a bit like in the first film, Jesse's like saying to Grady, I don't fall asleep. I'm going to sleep. I'm going to need you to wake me up if something bad happens. Obviously, Grady falls asleep.
Well, I really like this bit because it's it feels odd that this is happening so early in the franchise, 2 movies in, right? Mm. But it's repositioning Nightmare on Elm Street basically as a werewolf movie, right? This is kind of what was missing from some of those Howling movies that we watched. this element of someone being like, I've got no control over myself. And like, you know, you need to lock me up because I'm going to do something terrible.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't get that then. We're getting this here. He's like, it's because these Freddy Krueger moments just kind of come out of him seemingly at random. It's not to do with when he falls asleep. It just comes over him, right?
Yeah.
And he's just like, again, interesting that he abandons his loving, caring girlfriend to be like, no, Grady's the guy that needs to do this. I want to be in Grady's bedroom here. Like,
yeah, that's interesting.
And then as it goes on, Grady falls asleep and we get this amazing bit where Freddy starts to emerge
out of Jesse's
body.
So, you know, like the latex wall bit in the first film, that happens, but with Jesse's torso. And basically, it's almost like Jesse is a cocoon that Freddy breaks out of, scares the shit out of Grady, and then he cuts Grady to pieces.
Oh, it's so good. And there's like an eye, and this is where we get the eye.
Yeah, body horror kind of.
Out of Jesse's throat, as like Freddy the man is bursting out of him. And yeah, just fucking shit up. And then he goes totally funky town on that luau.
Oh, yeah, he shows up and like starts making everything hot and like makes the pool boil. He starts like slashing people to pieces, and then all the kids at the party are freaking out and they're like trampling each other to death. Like, it's brutal. It's my only issue maybe with this scene is I feel that Freddy is too much in the light. He's literally just standing there menacing about 30 to 40 kids who are all crammed in a corner, and he's just stood there just being I think it's a cool scene, but I think the thing that I like most about it is like how it makes all the other kids, like when the kids start actually like trampling each other and stuff. That's the bit that I think is really brutal.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And then
so the dad comes down, he's got a shotgun and he like chases Freddy away like he's like a stray dog or something.
Yeah.
And then Lisa goes out to the power station where Freddy Krueger used to work, where that boiler room is.
Where he got killed, where he got burnt to death, yeah.
She goes out there to fucking track him down.
And try and save Jesse. When she gets there and she walks into the power station, there are two dogs with human baby faces stood there for no reason. Don't know where they came from. It's terrifying.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
More of that, please.
More of that. Just came out of nowhere. No explanation. It's about 20 seconds of the film.
Love
it. It's great. And this kind of finale is it's weaker than the one than the finale of the first film.
Yeah.
She just kind of goes in and tries to, it's not like in the first one where they're trying to like trap Freddy and kill him. She's there to try and get Jesse back from Freddy. So it's not like the chase, the cat and mouse kind of chase. There's not the traps. It's just her saying, Jesse, you're still in there. Come back. And then she has a bit of a smooch with him, with Freddy Krueger, which is a bit grim.
Yeah, sort of, you know, pretty teen girl smooching Bobby UK, burns victim, Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
It's a bit rank. And then he bursts into flames.
He does burst into flames. And then Jesse,
there's like an ashen crust
of the face,
and then like he like taps it like a chicken, like a baby chicken emerging from an egg.
Yeah,
he like bursts out of this ashen crust,
and then everything's all right.
Or is it? Because in the next shot, they're back on that school bus again, just like from the start. One of the girls that was at the party is like, hey, that party was crazy. At which point Tom starts screaming at the screens, people died!
People fucking
you
died!
You do not remark that it was crazy.
Yeah.
And they're all like, fine. You know, Jesse's there with Lisa. They're holding hands. They're about to embark on a wonderful life together.
The bus starts going too fast.
Jesse's freaking out. No one else seems to notice the bus is going too fast. He's freaking out. He starts shouting at the driver, hey, driver, you slow down. Turns the bus stops, driver, some bloke. It's totally fine.
Yeah, what up, mate?
And then that girl that was sat behind them that said the party was crazy a fucking Freddy claw bursts out of her chest. Blah, blah.
And then suddenly the bus is driving out into that desert again. Credits.
Credits roll.
And that's the movie.
I mean, yeah.
And it's the film.
A little lacking in the final moments, but there's definitely...
Oh, there's some stuff in there.
There's some stuff in there that I really like.
The Freddy emerging from Jesse bit is... That's pretty gnarly. And, like, the pool party massacre. I mean, it's not... I feel like maybe I would have enjoyed that scene more if it was, like, Jason Voorhees, like, running around just with a machete going...
Yeah.
Crazy. It feels like it would be more speaks more to his character than Freddy Krueger. But then we're still learning really who Freddy is.
I don't think Freddy Krueger really belongs in a slasher movie, right?
It's all about tension, isn't it? And suspense with him. Like, and again, like this film, like only one core character dies.
The coach. Right, who gets whipped.
Oh, no, well, I was thinking, like, Grady, who's, like, one of, like, the central characters.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Because the coach is still kind of, like, he's, like, a B, C-tier character, isn't
he? He's not very well developed.
He's a background character. He's, like, a little sort of, like, a sub-villain.
And it's not, yeah, like, and then, like the idea of a core people. Character is Grady, the man who always has food in his mouth.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's his thing. That's the only thing we find out about him.
Yeah, yeah. And then lots of like faceless people at the party.
True. And so ordinarily, if this was a Friday the 13th film, you'd introduce all of those characters at the start. There'd be too many characters. Everyone would have their thing. Oh, this is the guy with fruit in his mouth. This is the guy that's the basketball coach, baseball coach, or whatever. And then one by one, Jason would pop up and dispatch them in various creative ways. That's not what Freddy Krueger is about, right? That's not what he should be for. That first movie has got basically four main characters, and they all die. But it takes the whole film. It's like slow, it's drawn out, and it's not even doing this kind of like weird, like, is it real, is it not, fake out kind of thing. It's just about like this story of Nancy discovering who Freddy is, what the family history is, like what the significance is.
Yeah.
And then that's what it's about. But the problem is they've let that cat out of the bag now. So unless you reveal more backstory.
Yeah, which they don't really in this.
You don't learn anything.
The connection to Freddy is quite tenuous and it never kind of has quite as much impact as that whole thing of like, oh, fuck, Nancy's mum killed Freddy. Well, that all makes sense why this is happening. It doesn't kind of make as much sense and it still has that same problem as with the first film, that instantly after the day is saved, everyone dies.
Yeah, and Lisa definitely didn't deserve to die, the girlfriend.
No,
in this.
No.
She saved Jesse multiple times. She didn't fall asleep. There was no real, like... Oh my God, I need to stay awake, otherwise horrible things are going to happen. Like,
no,
because Freddy can come whenever he wants.
That doesn't really happen in this film. Like, there isn't that kind of like, fuck me, don't go to sleep. There isn't that tension.
Yeah.
It's more about what's going on with Jesse. And it is weird that Lisa manifests as the hero of the piece, basically in the third act. She's not in it very much.
No.
And then suddenly you're like really rooting for her, but you're a bit like, where did she come from? Because we haven't really learned.
We know so little about her.
Yeah, but you're kind of like, yeah, good for you.
All we know about her is that she's really, really into Jesse and he's a little bit lukewarm on her.
Oh, man, there are some really lukewarm kisses. But I was being like, hell, but, you know, I'm sure they'll get it together. No, actually, like, they get driven out into that desert and Freddy kills them, so...
Bleak.
Yeah, bleak. Bleak. So, I mean, like, the next film, neither of us have seen that.
No.
And
Dream Warriors.
What do you think is going to happen with the Dream Warriors?
Well, buddy, I'm glad you asked. So when we watched Freddy vs. Jason back in season one, there was a lot of shit going on, like general plot MacGuffin, right, that we kind of chose to gloss over because we didn't get it. And I remember us having a chat while we were watching. We're like, what's this all about?
it's probably something from the Elm Street movies. Fine. We were just concentrating on the Friday the 13th stuff, yeah. Which is cool. So I'm so pumped to watch it again and maybe get it. And one of the things that I remember was going on in that didn't really make sense to us at the time was the kids were trying to acquire like some drug. They were trying to break into a hospital or something and steal some drug that would let them, I guess, like control their dreams or something to defend against Freddy. And so my vague twisted memory of that being in that film, I'm sure listeners that have seen that film more recently are screaming at their headphones right now that I'm getting it totally wrong. Sorry, guys. This was a year ago about that I watched this. That's my vague memory. That combined with the title of the movie, Dream Warriors.
Yeah, well, I remember when we were watching Friday the 13th, the new blood, the one that had telepathic Tina in it.
Yes.
And that we watched with our pal Rich Dundas from Neil Before Zod.
Yes.
He likened that film to Nightmare on Elm Street, Dream Warriors.
Yes.
In that there is the kids have some sort of like telepathic way, or they have a power with which an otherworldly power with which to fight.
It's a way to fight back,
the villain. Right? Mm. So yeah, maybe we'll have something where like there will be a character that they're going to have some means to fight Freddy that is more effective than what we have seen in previous films.
So what I'd like to see, but I don't know that this would necessarily be a good thing or not, right? I just want to see it so that I can then decide if I like it.
Okay, yeah.
I want to see what, basically, like, you know that movie Labyrinth?
Oh, yeah.
The David Bowie movie? I want it to be this, right? I want it to be a bunch of teens who decide to take matters into their own hands and they go deep into the dream world.
Okay, yeah.
But they've got control over stuff in the dream world, but they have to, like... They have to, like, go deeper and deeper into the nightmare, and they kind of walk through their psyche, and they have to get to the heart of the nightmare to battle with Freddy Krueger. And
yeah.
Maybe that would be shit, but I want to see it so I can decide if it's good or not, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if Dream Warriors is going to be that, but this feels like a good opportunity to do that.
Yeah, and I'm just interested now to see what they're going to do with Freddy, because... two films and they've done quite different things with him.
Yeah.
So I want to see what his reason is for coming back, how he comes back and why. Like, I know he's just kind of like, just kill for me. I want you to kill for me. But I kind of want him to have a bit more of a motivation.
Well, don't forget that I'm not defending the guy, but
he was just a child murderer.
He was a murderer. He liked to murder.
Yeah.
Like, that's what he did. That was his raison d'etre.
Okay.
So he does just like that. That's kind of his motivation.
Yeah, Freddy's going to do what Freddy's going to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm not defending it, but, like, maybe you're asking a little bit much.
But in the first film, he was out for revenge. Like, there was specific motives to what he was doing. So
I did wonder at
which
the time,
I think works better.
Yeah. I did wonder, like, if this is, again, we're getting to a slightly dark place here, but, like, if what Freddy did was murder children, that's what he was into, and he's got this power to, like, insert himself into people's dreams and kill them, why was he not appearing in the dreams of children and murdering them, that if that's what Freddy likes to do? Like, why was he coming for these, like, teenagers and grown-ups? I mean, I get he had some revenge, now he's got that out of the way. This is surely where he stuck. Like, this is, like I said, I don't think he should. I don't want him to.
I think that is just too dark a film.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I think Bobby England just, like, terrorizing and murdering five-year-olds is... They passed on that screenplay. They were just kind of like, we're just going in a different direction with the franchise. We just really want Bobby England to do something a little bit more wacky.
Which is kind of what Bobby England does.
He loves it. He loves it. The Pee Wee Herman of horror.
Oh my God, though, Pee Wee Herman is so creepy.
Oh yeah, he's terrifying. He's terrifying. It's a sign we're getting off track.
The peewee alarm just went off.
The peewee alarm has gone off.
That was our word of the day.
Saying that it is time for bed. Thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry if it's been a little bit disjointed, but the movie was...
was like that.
Yeah.
It did it to us.
Yeah. As always, thank you so much for listening. If you want to drop us a line, we'd love to hear from you. We're on Twitter. We answer every single tweet we get. You can reach us at BitterEndPod. Or you can find us on Facebook at BitterEndPod. We post every episode up there. We post occasional other like snippets of things that we think are interesting, or pictures from recording, scenes from the films, things like that. Get on there. If you comment on something, we'll probably answer you. We'll probably like it, unless you're insulting.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Come on.
Don't do that. Come on, mate.
Don't be a dick. Thanks very much. And so please join us next time where we will be watching Dream Warriors.
Dream Warrior. Dream Warrior. I was going to do a thing there. It's gone now.
Mate, baffled me.
Yeah, I know. Dream Warriors, come out to play it. Nailed it.
Nailed it. All right, we're out of here.